ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वी वेलकम ऑल द डिवोटीज टू द मॉर्निंग भागवतम क्लास। टुडे वी आर ऑन कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 12 टेक्स्ट नंबर 13। अथाघ अगनामाभ्यपतन महासुरस तेषां सुख क्रीडन वीक्षणाक्षमा नित्यं यदंतर निज जीवितेप्सुभि पितामृतैरप्यमरै प्रतीक्ष्यते। ट्रांसलेशन एंड परपोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। माय डियर किंग परीक्षित, देर आफ्टर देर अपियर्ड ए ग्रेट डीमन नेम्ड अघासुर हुज डेथ वॉज बींग अवेटेड इवन बाय द डेमीगॉड्स। द डेमीगॉड्स drank nectar every day, but still they feared this great demon and awaited his death. This demon could not tolerate the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed in the forest by the cowherd boys. Purport. One may ask how Krishna's pastimes could be interrupted by demon. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this question by saying that although the transcendental pleasure being enjoyed by the cowherd boys could not be stopped, unless they stopped the transcendental pleasure of their various activities, they could not eat their lunch. Therefore, at lunchtime, Aghasur appeared by the arrangement of Yog Maya so that for the time being, they could stop their activities and take lunch. Changing varieties are the mother of enjoyment. The cowherd boys would continuously play, then stop, and then again enjoy in a different way. Therefore, every day a demon would come and interrupt their sporting pastimes. The demon would be killed, and then the boys would engage again in their transcendental pastimes. Krishna, before beginning, I'll seek the blessings of all the devotees present here. Please allow me to speak something in glorification of the Supreme Lord in accordance with the parampara. We are seeing here Krishna's activities around 5,000 years back when he was in Bhauma Vrindavan. And these are termed as Naimittik Leelas. And Krishna's Nitya Leela, which is uninterrupted, is in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there are no demons, but definitely there are rumors of the demons. There's always this air going around. Maybe this demon will attack, maybe that demon will attack. And in the material world, when Krishna comes, demons do come. So Krishna is so expert. He knows what is the best. He chooses what is the best. In the spiritual world, the devotees there are fully satisfied in enjoying their loving dealings with Krishna, completely immersed in sweetness. So if a demon comes there, really, and Krishna has to deal with him, it will disturb that sweetness. The power aspect, the greatness of Krishna will disturb the sweetness, and that would not be right for the devotees there. Here, we are trying to relish the sweetness, but we need regular reminders of Krishna's greatness. Otherwise, there is always a chance for faithless people like the people in the material world to take Krishna cheaply. So then Krishna arranges, no, there is a lot of sweet activities of Krishna, but in between the demons also come, and then Krishna deals with them and says, oh, the same person who was stealing butter is also capable of great activities, so he must be God. So wherever, whatever is required, Krishna can arrange that. There the sweetness should not be interrupted. Here it is necessary for the sweetness to be interrupted. And so Krishna arranges for demons to come. Here in this verse, this particular demon, Agha, is especially mentioned as Mahasura. He's not just any other Asura, he's a Mahasura. The typical characteristics of a demon are magnified probably in this case. He must have really strong qualities that qualify to be called a demon. And one quality in the same verse that comes and that is described here is Vikshana Akshama. So Shukdev Goswami is choosing the word Maha Asura for describing Aghasura. And then in the same verse he's saying one quality about Aghasura is what? Vikshana Akshama. And Vikshana Akshama, Prabhupada is translating here as being unable to see, he could not tolerate the transcendental happiness of the cowherd boys. So this is something that stands out as the extraordinary quality of a demon. He is unable to tolerate the happiness of others. And that's why Shukdev Goswami mentions it in particular while qualifying in another word, Aghasura, as a Mahasura, as a super excellent demon. When he was seeing the happiness of these cowherd boyfriends with Krishna, he could have just begged, participated in the pastimes, he could have requested entrance into that. But the typical reaction is, if I cannot do it, nobody else can do it. I have to stop their enjoyment. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur very nicely informs us, how is it that an ordinary envious jiva can interrupt the Supreme Lord's pastimes? He is fully swarat, he is fully independent. So how can his independence be interrupted? So no, from a deeper perspective, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur informs us, no, it's all the arrangement of Yog Maya. For the sweet pastimes to take place, for them to sit together and have prasad in the loving company of each other, all this play that they are enjoying has to stop. So then Leela Shakti arranges that. I remember meeting many people who sometimes ask this. I want to understand this law of karma. Karma, good reaction for good action, bad reaction for bad action, is something that attracts us. And sometimes in the beginning stages of devotional service, when we are not sufficiently exposed to the karmani nirdhati kintu cha bhakti bhajan, this principle how good or bad, ultimately all our reactions from the past can be destroyed by the fire of bhakti. Bhakti is more or less one variety of piety. If you are not understanding the extraordinary, the super excellent qualities of bhakti, I'll explain what I mean. We are exposed to people who are religious and sometimes they go to this temple and sometimes they go to that temple, they give in charity. Sometimes they are seen reading religious books. And sometimes when devotees who are practicing pure, unmotivated devotional service are also seen reading books, they also seem to have religious symbols, they also go to temples, they go to yatras. Sometimes an uninformed person equates the two. So this is also another variety. A person whom I know practices this variety of piety. Sabka bhala karo, kisi se kuch galat mat karo, madad karo, like that. So these are also one of those people, is it not? So, sorry. We are very much attracted to this good and bad principle. Because good and bad principle seems to put us in power. If I want good things to happen in my life, let me invest in a good way today. So let me do something good today. And then I can enjoy. So in one sense, I can control my life. And we understand that bhakti is not about controlling our lives, but serving the person who actually controls everyone's life. Is it not? So sometimes people ask this, that I want to understand this karma principle. I want to really go deep into this. And then many times I quote this line that Krishna says, karmano hi api bodhavyam. And then at the end he says, gahana karmano gati. He says, the principle of karma is very gahan. The Supreme Lord himself is saying, how can you and me understand it? And there are so many examples to explain how the karma principle is very touchy to discuss. So sometimes one of the questions that comes up is, if if a person, let's say, for example, Anil beats up Sunil. So, all right, you know, this. How do we understand this? That is Anil a person who is desirous of doing something wrong to Sunil? But then if, you know, you beat up somebody on the street, and I see that this Sunil, you know, Prabhuji, I know him since many years, and he's an honest guy, and, you know, he's a very nice gentleman. He did not deserve this. Definitely he did not deserve this. So how did Anil beat up Sunil? And then, if you try to explain it, a point comes where you can put it like this, and I try to put it like this, that Krishna's external energy which controls this world is also very amazing at orchestrating different things together. So here we are seeing Krishna's internal energy working in such a way that the demon also comes, and it is time for them to take a break from their activity so that they can take lunch, and then all those things are happening together. So I explained it at one point of time in a way that Mr. Anil had always a desire, a free desire, a free will desire, independent desire to harm somebody. He's an envious person. And Mr. Sunil, because of some past activities, deserves to be beat up by somebody. That was the reaction that was due to him. So the external energy works in such a way that it brings the two people together. So Mr. Anil wanted to beat up somebody, so then he gets a chance to beat up Mr. Sunil. And Sunil anyways deserved that. So now what next? Because Mr. Anil used his free will in a wrong way, now he becomes susceptible to a future reaction. So then Anil will need to be beaten someplace, sometime in the future by somebody. And then somebody else who has a desire to beat will be brought together. And in this way, the karma cycle, anadi, it's beginningless. So very interestingly, a person who deserves to be beat is brought to a place, is brought near a person who wants to express his envy to somebody. So this is another principle where, you know, two things are brought together. They are in one sense disconnected, but then when they come together, the play goes ahead. The activities goes ahead. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he describes Aghasur. He says it represents the tendency of the mind to commit violence to others. Here we see Aghasur is just seeing the whole play and unnecessarily is getting agitated. So violence is of three types: physical, mental, spiritual. Physical violence is when you harm the body, the gross body. Mental violence is when you harm the subtle body, the mind. You speak some ill words against somebody. And spiritual violence is when you impede the spiritual advancement of somebody. Of all three, spiritual violence is the greatest, and the reactions will be more severe for that. If you observe the current world, there is definitely physical violence, there is definitely mental violence, but especially degrading quality of this age is that there is a lot of spiritual violence. We are surrounded by faithless people, and even at the expression of a slightest amount of faith in God or trying to lead a spiritual life, there is always opposition. Somebody will say, "Arey, kisne dekha hai, chhod. Who knows what will happen in the future? Just forget everything and have a nice life." So this violence is something that we should never engage in. Since we are not pure currently, two things will happen. Either we will be susceptible to engage in these three kinds of violence. We might end up causing physical or mental or spiritual violence to somebody. Or we can be victims of somebody's committing physical, mental or spiritual violence. Dhruv Maharaj, he comes out as a golden example of determination. He comes out as a super excellent example of how one-pointed faith makes him a devotee. Yes, but even after that, when he returns home and when his stepbrother Uttama is killed by the yakshas, he's killed by a few yakshas. But Dhruv Maharaj becomes so furious. He almost eliminates all the yakshas. There's a terrible description given of how they attacked Dhruv, and Dhruv attacks them. And finally, Swayambhu Manu has to intervene. The father of the yakshas, Kuvera, has to intervene. And they tell him that actually the harm that was caused was by a few yakshas. In return for that, you almost eliminated the entire yaksha race. So please don't do that. You have to stop now. And Swayambhu Manu gives so much instructions that all actually time is the original killer. The yakshas are not the killer of Uttama. And so he mentions that you also can take a step back and you also don't become the killer of them. So he's a devotee. But being in the material world is not an easy thing to do. You have to pay a price for staying here. So you are susceptible to committing violence to others. What about we being at the receiving end of violence? Mother Devaki, who's none other than the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord, chose to appear in her womb. So how exalted is she? But she is susceptible to violence by her own dear brother on the day of her wedding, at a time when he is very nicely escorting her to her in-law's place. So whoever you are, however high you may be, but in the material world there is always a danger. Either you will indulge in violence or you will be at the receiving end of violence. What is the hope for us? If we are at the receiving end of violence, the hope for us is it makes us more detached from this world. We understand how this world is always full of trouble. And it can act as an impetus for us to take more shelter of the Lord. What if we engage in violence? What is the hope for us? If sincerely regretted, the activities of unplanned, the activities of unknowingly committed, forced by the modes of nature, bhava pravaha, if unknowingly committed acts of violence are sincerely regretted, then it is mentioned that the fire of repentance can burn these offenses, these sins. In the first canto, Srila Prabhupada mentions. When my mind is envious, instead of using my intelligence, instead of using my facilities to make plans for my advancement or even for my enjoyment, I make active plans for stopping somebody else's enjoyment. There are many cases in this world of how, you know, these cases are typically called as acid throwing cases. Somebody has a relationship with somebody, and then the female in that relationship, due to some reason, is not able to take that relationship ahead. And this young boy, he says, if I cannot have her, nobody else should have her. Takes acid and throws at her. Typical example of envy. If I can't enjoy, nobody else can enjoy. I'll spoil her life also. So this is something that we observe many times. I'm more concerned with destroying the happiness of others. Yes? So I'll take two examples from the Bhagavatam and we'll try to see if we can come up with something in connection with this theme. In the sixth canto, there is a story of Chitraketu Maharaj. He did not have a son for a long, long time. Angira Rishi blesses him with a son. And when the son is born, the king is described as a cloud who indiscriminately showers. He distributes gold, he distributes silver, chariots, horses, elephants, villages. To the brahmanas, he calls to bless the child. He distributes 60 crore cows in charity on the occasion of his son's birth. The queen is overjoyed, seeing the happiness of the king and the queen. The subjects are overjoyed. They are really happy to look forward to their future ruler. But as this is going on, a lot of other people are in distress. King Chitraketu had 10 million wives. There is 100 lakh wives. Only one of them bore a son. What about the others? They were burning in a fire of envy. They could not tolerate. So two things happened. One was because this one queen, Kritadyuti, bore a son. She got extra favor from the king. And extra favor from the king for Kritadyuti meant neglect for the other queens. So neglect by the husband was one reason. And it was coupled by the prosperity of Kritadyuti. Kritadyuti was becoming more and more happier every day. Seeing the child grow up is such a nice thing. Ajamil is described as being very enchanted. Kalabhashanam, the sweet sounds that a small child makes are very attractive to the mother and father. So Kritadyuti's happiness is increasing every day. Neglect by the husband and prosperity of Kritadyuti. These two have a very deteriorating effect on the other queens. And it is mentioned, Vidvesha Nashta Mataya. The word that is used is the envy, Dvesha, that was felt in the hearts of these queens, destroyed, Nashta Mataya, destroyed the intelligence of the queens. So such a deteriorating effect of envy that the facility, the capacity that you and me have to separate good from bad, to separate right from wrong, is destroyed by envy. Anything else that happens, we can somehow make do. But if we lose the facility, if we lose the capacity to distinguish what is good for me, what is bad for me, and we mix up, we end up accepting that which is bad for me, and we end up negating or not accepting that which is good for me. So what happened? Burning with the fire of envy, they administer poison to the child. The child dies. The king is described as becoming so disturbed, he can barely walk a few steps. He walks, he falters. He walks, he falters. The queen is almost dead. What about the subjects? What about the kingdom? They are also in gloom. They do not know what to do. So this is one example of how if somebody is envious, then what is the effect? The effect is everyone around us is put into doom. And I'll take another example. This example is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and well-known example of Srila Ramanand Rai. Ramanand Rai was a very responsible government officer. He was the governor of Madras province under the rule of King Prataprudra of Orissa. So, Prataprudra Maharaj had a burning desire to meet Lord Chaitanya. Since all the devotees in Orissa would be talking about him, his own advisor, Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, would be praising Lord Chaitanya. He had a desire. And he put it through Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, considering that Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya is a person who is close to Lord Chaitanya. So one day when Lord Chaitanya is approached by Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, and he requests the King Prataprudra, he wants to meet you. Can you give an audience to him? Lord flatly refuses. Without any hesitation, without any stopping, without any thinking, he says, no, not possible. Sarvabhaum tries to push his case forward. He says, Sarvabhaum kahe satya tomara vachana. Yes, I know that. A materialist should not be met by a renunciate. Satya tomara vachana. But Jagannath Sevaka Raja Kintu Bhaktottama. But this king is not a materialist king. He is Jagannath Sevak. He is Bhaktottama. He is the best of the devotees. Who is King Prataprudra? At one point of time, King Prataprudra approached the king of Madras, probably before he, okay, this incident comes now. He approached the king of Madras for the king's daughter, the princess, to be married to his own son. And it was almost fixed. But this news reached the king of Madras, Chennai, that the king of Orissa, King Prataprudra, one day in a year, he takes a broom in his hand and he sweeps the street in front of everyone. So when this news reached Madras king, he said, I do not want to marry my daughter in the family of sweepers, street sweepers. So he insulted the king. Obviously he is a king. He is not a street sweeper. But he insulted. And King Prataprudra traveled all the way from Jagannath Puri to Madras, destroyed him in a battle, just to tell him, I am not a sweeper. I am not any ordinary sweeper. I am the sweeper of Lord Jagannath. I am a devotee of Lord Jagannath, and as a devotee I am doing this service. So if you are doubting that, let me teach you a lesson. And if it was motivated by envy, it wasn't motivated by envy. There is a story of how Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram themselves participated in this war. They helped King Prataprudra in this war destroy the king of Madras. So it wasn't based on some selfishness also, otherwise Lord would not have helped. It was purely motivated by showing him, don't think that somebody who serves Lord Jagannath is an ordinary person. He wanted to show him that. So this is King Prataprudra, Jagannatha Sevaka Raja Kintu Bhaktottama. What does Lord Chaitanya do? Lord Chaitanya again refutes it. He says, better than meeting this king, I willingly drink poison. I can do that, but I'll not meet this king. So what to do? King Prataparudra pushes his case through somebody else. He is not a person who just had a whim, who just had a spontaneous, sudden desire to meet Lord Chaitanya. No. He had an intense desire. He was really willing to pay any price for that. So he then tries another route. Another person who is dear to Lord Chaitanya is Ramanand Rai. It is mentioned that there are 3.5 personalities with whom Lord Chaitanya discussed the intimate pastimes of Krishna. One is Swarup Damodar Goswami, one is Ramanand Rai, one is Shikhi Mahiti, and half is the sister of Shikhi Mahiti, Srimati Madhavi Devi, old woman. So Ramanand Rai is one of those intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. In fact, Lord Chaitanya considered Sanatan Goswami and Ramanand Rai to be on an equal platform. Now, Sanatan Goswami is one of the biggest renunciates and Ramanand Rai was a householder. But both of them had two qualities. Both of them were detached from sense gratification and both of them kept Krishna in the center. There is a wonderful story of how Pradyumna Mishra saw Ramanand Rai's devotion in action when he was dressing young girls for a dance performance, completely untouched by Maya. So Lord Chaitanya considered Ramanand Rai as a very exalted devotee and Prataparudra Maharaj forwarded his case through Ramanand Rai. When Ramanand Rai approaches Lord Chaitanya, he first praises Prataparudra Maharaj in front of Lord Chaitanya. And hearing the praise of Prataparudra Maharaj, a Vishayi, in the words of Lord Chaitanya, through the words of a bhakta, through the words of a devotee, Ramanand Rai, Lord Chaitanya's heart softens. He does not give strong words in return, just like he had given to Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya earlier. Then Ramanand Rai explains the readiness of King Prataparudra to accept somebody who is lower than him. King Prataparudra is the person to whom Ramanand Rai reports. He is the governor and he is reporting to the king. And Ramanand Rai, although he is also in a position of governance, he is receiving so much mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is spending so much intimate time with him. But when this news reaches Prataparudra Maharaj, instead of developing envy for Ramanand Rai, actually he becomes very glad. And he grants pension to Ramanand Rai, saying that if Lord Chaitanya is so much interested in talking to you, spending time with you, and he is so attracted to your devotional service, I grant you full salary. You can take leave from your duties as a governor. So this incident is narrated by Ramanand Rai to Lord Chaitanya. And when this incident falls on the ears of Lord Chaitanya is exceptionally happy seeing, I did not give my mercy to King Prataparudra. And consequently, when King Prataparudra would have seen somebody else receive mercy, especially somebody who's junior to him, especially somebody who's lower than him, that was enough reason for King Prataparudra to become envious of Ramanand Rai. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of the deliverance of King Muchukunda, King Muchukunda speaks some prayers to Lord Krishna, and then Lord Krishna tells him who he is, and then King Muchukunda again speaks for the second time. And there are a series of verses where King Muchukunda explains the fallen position of an exalted materialist king. He says, I am a Kshatra Bandhu. I am a fallen Kshatriya king. All the time I spent thinking that I am a big person. People reported to me. I would travel around on horses and chariots and elephants. And he says, now I realize the person who got the title of a king and was sitting on an elephant is called by another title later. Worms, stool, feces. So if you want to understand what is the high estimation of himself in the king's heart, in a typical king's heart, the other examples of Bhagavatam are Ambarish Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, you will not get an understanding of how a proud king thinks of himself. But Muchukunda, in that chapter, he speaks of how a proud king thinks about himself. So Prataparudra Maharaj was an amazing king.
He had every reason to be proud of. He was a Gajapati. In this part of India, in Maharashtra, western side, you call an exceptional king by Chhatrapati. He has an umbrella that is represented. He's not a king, he's an emperor. On that side of the country, he's called Gajapati. Gajapati means he is the owner of many elephants. He's a great person. He is so rich that he can have a stable of elephants, not of horses only. So he was a Gajapati. He went as far as here. If you see the history of India, then so many parts in the north and even till Bengal was ruled by Nawab Hussain Shah. Is it not? These are contemporary times. Sanatan Goswami, Rup Goswami would work under the rule of Nawab Hussain Shah. So as close as Bengal, the Muslims had come. The Mughals had come. But what about Orissa? He was such an exceptional king. He was such a brave king. Not only did he prevent his kingdom from being invaded by the Mughals, when somebody threatened him, he went even to south, till as far as Madras. So very amazing king, very brave king, not only brave, Bhaktottama. Every reason to feel, I have some qualification to meet the king, is it not? But no. So, when this is put forward by Ramanand Rai, he even adds, actually, I have seen so much love in King Pratap Rudra's eyes for you. He says, I do not have even a fraction of his love for you. Now, this statement is too much for Lord Chaitanya. When a devotee puts forward application of somebody else's devotion, how can the Lord refuse? Prabhu kahe tumi Krishna Bhakta Pradhan. So he's addressing Ramanand Rai. Prabhu kahe tumi Krishna Bhakta Pradhan. Toma ke ye priti kare sahi bhagyavan. What is the bhagya of King Pratap Rudra? Not that he's Bhaktottama, he's Dasottama. Toma ke ye priti kare. What is the qualification of King Pratap Rudra? He is especially benevolent towards you, and you happen to be Bhakta Pradhan. You happen to be a great devotee. So anybody who has love for a devotee is also great in the estimation of Lord Chaitanya. But somebody who was described as Bhaktottama, Lord Chaitanya was not much affected. So I just wanted to highlight this part, that sometimes we are very much interested in bhakti, is it not? We bhakti kar rahe hai hum log, hum bhakt hai, we say that, is it not? So sometimes a bhakta, as is experienced by me myself, I am trying to practice bhakti, but sometimes I become so proud. Bhakti, if not done properly, if not understood properly, can include pride. But can we discuss this for a moment? That can a das become proud? Das is a person who considers somebody as his master and then is always willing to serve as per the time, place and circumstance, whatever is necessary. If this is necessary, I will do this. If that is necessary, I will do this. Very, very difficult for a das to become proud. But for a bhakta, it's possible. At least it's possible in my case. And I would like to speak a little bit about this, that a bhakta can be a dasa and may not be in the spirit of a dasa. Yes? So he can be a dasa and he may not be a dasa. What about a dasa? Can he be a bhakta, or is there a possibility that a dasa is a good dasa but he is not a good bhakta? Let's talk about this a little bit. This is one story in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes. He had a personal servant, Shruta Kirti Prabhu. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu, because he would accompany Srila Prabhupada to various temples, he would see whenever they would get down from the plane or at the airport, whenever they would arrive, the local devotees there would have a rousing kirtan. So many times we have heard from Prabhupada disciples how they were so much overjoyed to see Prabhupada personally come to their place. And they would dance and they would jump and they would say, Jai Prabhupada, they would chant Hare Krishna for hours together in anticipation of their spiritual master. So amazing welcome. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu would travel with Prabhupada. And one point of time, he had a doubt. So one day he is massaging Srila Prabhupada's body and he puts forward a doubt. Says, Srila Prabhupada, I had a doubt. I see that whenever we go someplace, the local devotees there, they are so happy to see you. They can't restrain their joy. Sometimes I feel, even though I am your personal servant, I do not have so much love for you. And Srila Prabhupada was being massaged. He kept quiet. He did not answer it in that instance. The massage went on. Shruta Kirti Prabhu got his signal. Yeah, stop. Don't go ahead. So after 2-3 days, again, this seva is happening. And Shruta Kirti Prabhu is massaging Srila Prabhupada. And then suddenly, there's no connection. And Srila Prabhupada asks him, Shruta Kirti, do you like to serve me? So he says, yes. So do you like whatever seva I give you as a personal servant? He says, yes. He says, then you love me. And then Shruta Kirti Prabhu makes that connection that 2 or 3 days back, I had put forward this point to Prabhupada. That, Prabhupada, I don't have so much love. I don't feel like jumping. I don't feel like doing all those ecstatic things that the local devotees do. And what did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada did not answer it that time. Later he asked, in a totally unconnected way, do you like to serve me? And when it was replied in the affirmative, Prabhupada made that connection. Liking to serve somebody is loving somebody. So I may not be able to cry tears in front of Radha Gopinath. I may not be able to cry tears in front of my spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada. But the question to ask to myself is, do I like to serve Prabhupada? Do I like to serve Radha Gopinath? And if I am happy in my service, dasatva, the Acharya is saying, your dasatva is equivalent to bhakti. Bhakti is loving devotional service, is it not? So, I may be a very big bhakta, but if I am not situated in dasatva, then that bhakti may be a little bit leaning towards something else. That pride may take it in another direction. But if I am firmly situated in dasatva, I may not have bhakti, I may not have love for Krishna and so on. But the Acharya is saying that dasatva is equivalent to bhakti. So this is something that we can learn from Pratap Rudra Maharaj. Although he has bhakti and dasatva both, but when Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya explained the bhakti of King Pratap Rudra, he was not given much value. But when his dasatva was explained, that was taken very interestingly. When will we become envious? We'll become envious when we have this scarcity consciousness. Scarcity consciousness means, especially for devotees, you know, we are a group of devotees, we are a family of devotees. This devotee is receiving so much. This devotee is progressing so much. Probably, if he receives so much, I will fall short of my quota, my deserve mercy. I deserve mercy. I am doing so much bhakti, not so much of dasatva. But I deserve some mercy. And maybe I'll fall short when Krishna is about to distribute mercy. Then if he has distributed so much mercy to others, then I will get less. But Lord Krishna, as was explained by the father of Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Mohande, he has thousands of hands. He has unlimited hands. If he wants to give you mercy, he'll give you so much mercy that it will spill out. Your two hands will be less to receive that mercy. Is it not? So sometimes we bring material concepts in spiritual life. We are used to playing different games. Their hockey has certain rules and football has certain rules. Similar games, you play with a ball and you have 2 goals. Sometimes we start playing hockey with the rules of football. Now hockey has its own rules. Football has its own rules. You cannot mix up the 2 games. So in material life, definitely resources are very limited. Resources are very scanty. If somebody is getting too much, I may not get. For a post that is advertised, for a vacancy that is advertised, 10 people come, only 1 will get and 9 people will be refused. But in the court of Krishna, it does not happen like that. To the extent to which we are sincere, all 10 will get mercy. Is it not? So we have to realize Krishna is really, honestly, truly unlimited. If he wants to give us mercy, he can shower his mercy completely on all the living entities of this world. Did not Lord Chaitanya free all the living entities when it was requested by Vasudev Datta? Vasudev Datta said, free all the living entities. Now, they were not even practicing, some of them I'm sure, they were not even practicing devotional service, what to speak of being in the sadhaka stage. But Lord Chaitanya wanted, all right, if Vasudev Datta is saying, let everyone go back to the spiritual world, he sent everyone back to the spiritual world. There is no shortage of mercy. But we sometimes forget that, and that's what we have to overcome in the course of our devotional service. At the end, I'll tell you one small story that I'd heard in my childhood. There was this hospital, and there were 2 patients lying on adjacent beds. And one patient of them was more seriously ill, and another patient was not so seriously ill, but he had some broken back or something. and he could not get up from his bed. So he was just in a lying down position. So every day in the morning, this person who was seriously ill, who would cough a lot and who was in a terrible state, he would get to sit up. He could sit up. He did not have to lie down. So he would get up in the bed, and there was a window adjacent to his bed, and sometimes he would look out of the window and try to speak to this person. So this person could not get up, and he could not see what is happening around. He said, "Today is such a nice day. Today the sun is brightly shining. Today the sky is very clear." Sometimes he would narrate which birds are flying in the sky. Sometimes he would say, "Oh, you know what? There is this beautiful procession going around." He would say, "There's this beautiful lake here and there are swans floating there." So very nicely, they would have a nice interaction in this way. As this was happening, the person who was bedridden, one day developed a little bit of envy for this person. He said, "Here I am, I cannot get up from my bed. I cannot do any of my own activities. I am dependent on the hospital staff. I do not even have a window next to me to experience the nice fresh air from outside. I cannot see what is happening outside. And this person, he is such an ill person. I am sure he has got very bad reactions for his nasty past. He must have hurt a lot of people. Abhi achha ho gaya." Free will is like that. Sometimes you unknowingly become envious of somebody for no good reason. So he developed a little bit of envy for him. And slowly that small amount of envy matured into a lot of hatred, resentment for him. And he started thinking, why is he getting all the facilities? He can get up when he wants. He has a beautiful view of the outside world. I cannot see anything. Slowly it increased. One night, this person who was seriously ill, who was more ill, started coughing and coughing. And he could not... He was very visibly on the decline. Yes, something had happened. There was possibly an attack or something. And he was frantically searching for that emergency button. Yes, there's always a button near a bed with which you can summon the nurses. So he was trying to, but he was so much coughing. He was in such a bad condition. He just kept gasping for breath and he was just kept searching for this button and it could not be found. Now, by this commotion, by this small noise that was created, this person woke up actually, the person who was bedridden, and he had easy access to his emergency button. But as I mentioned, the small amount of envy had matured into hatred. And you know, it was just boiling inside him. He said, "You know, this person, he gets everything. I think it's time for him to go." And he chooses not to press that button. And this person leaves his body. The next day in the morning, it is found out. The nurses come, they take this person away. And this person is undergoing mixed feelings. But still, nevertheless, he did that. So now is his day of glory. Now is his day when he can exercise his choice. Now is the day when finally he will experience the outside world. Yes? So he tells the nurse, "Since this bed is empty now, can you transfer me to that bed?" "So of course we can transfer you to that bed." He's put in that bed. And as he is being shifted into that bed, as he is looking forward to experiencing the beautiful vision outside and the beautiful air outside, he sees the hospital as a very high wall. And this wall is almost to the height of the window. What I mean to say is, he just sees a wall outside. There is nothing to be seen outside that window. So that moment he realizes that all these days, actually this person who was next to him, would just make up stories to fill this bedridden patient's life with some joy. He could see that this person was bereft of all joy. He said, "Can I tell you about what is happening outside? This is a beautiful lake," and so on. So actually he was trying to help this person, but sometimes help received undeservingly is rejected. And sometimes you could even act in such a malicious way towards the person who's helping you. So this person, he ends up harming his own recovery. And obviously, you know, all that guilt makes him more and more worse. In the 9th chapter of Gita, Lord Krishna says, in the first verse, "Idam tute guhyatamam, idam pravakshami anusuyave, jnana vijnana sahitam, yad gyatva mokshase ashubhat." So, Krishna is saying, What is your qualification, Arjun? Anasuyave. You are non-envious. And because of that, I will speak to you that knowledge which will remove all inauspiciousness, all that is troublesome will be removed. So first is knowledge that will remove all inauspiciousness from our life. And if we want that knowledge, what is our qualification? Non-envy. Yes? This is an example for that. The knowledge that he was receiving from the neighboring patient was removing all inauspiciousness from his life. Yes? His life was transformed. He could no longer feel the pain. He could no longer feel that he is all alone. None of his relatives are visiting him. So the knowledge that he was receiving from his neighboring patient was knowledge that was removing his inauspiciousness from his life. There was. Being in the material world, there will be inauspiciousness in our lives. But it will not affect us if we receive knowledge. And Krishna says, only when you are non-envious will I get. Similarly, in this case also, till the moment the bedridden patient was non-envious of this person, he was receiving that knowledge which was removing inauspiciousness from his life. But the day this person became envious of his friend patient, what did he do? He caused for that knowledge that destroys inauspiciousness in his life to stop. Similarly, when Krishna is giving us devotional service through devotees, through the spiritual masters, through the acharyas, one thing that we can start with is becoming non-envious. And then we can become enthusiastic for it, and then we can become eager for it, and then we can develop love for it, and so on. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much for your patient listening. If somebody has any questions or comments, then you may correct me. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki.